You are listening to The Alex Way.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Alex Way podcast and show. This is a show about passion, dedication, and leadership in the soccer industry, the soccer world. Needless to say, this is the industry in the sports world, the sport, universal sport, the most powerful one in the history of mankind, financially, and obviously in terms of marketing. So I'm very excited for the episode today. But before we get started, I want to remind you of a couple of different things. Where you can find us in the most popular podcasting platforms, such as iTunes, Google Play, and obviously Spotify. You go to anchor.fm/Moraes Millera, or just go into Google and search the podcast with the hashtag The Alex Way, and you should be able to find it. Also, if you want to support this podcast and our efforts to continue to work and speak to quality guests, then just go to PayPal. The link is in the description. Go to PayPal and tip us or donate, whatever it is. Anything counts. And obviously, if you would like to order quality gourmet style or specialty bread, you got Chef Maria Moraes with her Sugar Bread Co. Just go to Instagram or go to Facebook or LinkedIn. Email, direct message her, and you'll get your bread or bread orders shipped to your home across the U.S. Great. So without any further ado, don't forget to follow us on social media, all sorts of social media. And now I'm ready for us to speak with our guest for this episode. I'm very excited because he is not only a soccer professional, but also a friend. And he is in many ways a mentor of mine in my coaching career. I'm talking about Mr. David John Critchley. Welcome to the show, David.
And thank you for having me today, Alex. I'm looking forward to it.
That's awesome. Thank you for your time. And obviously, thank you to St. Louis City and PR, because Sean Smith was very helpful to make this happen. So just wanted to put that out there. Well, I would like to just say a few words and to put in perspective who David is. So let's talk about his education for a little bit. David is someone who currently has a bachelor's of science, majored in exercise science, non-clinical fitness program management from Oklahoma Wesleyan University. Also, I have to say the same alma mater provided him the opportunity to study a master's in business administration, an MBA with an emphasis in marketing. So how cool, huh? He was a great student, above 3.6 GPA average. We didn't have to say that, but hey, that is really something really positive. And besides the university or academic education on, academia, obviously we have a little bit more about his coaching education at the same time. David currently holds his A license with the United States Soccer Federation. He has a national A license. Also, he managed to achieve the Premier Diploma as well as the Advanced National Diploma, both of those with United Soccer Coaches. And let's not forget, if I'm not mistaken, David, you achieved your UEFA B license as well. Is this correct?
It was waived. So what happens now is I'm actually in the wait list for the UEFA A license. So when a spot currently opens up over in the UK, hopefully I'll be going over and spending some time continuing my education and getting the UEFA A license. So looking forward to that in the near future here.
Look at that. Thank you for the update. It seems I don't have the best resume anymore. All right. So we are going to get started here. Sorry about that. We got some little issue in there. Okay, so David, you have a great history as a player, coming to study abroad as an international from England. Then someone who, even though studied in the US, studied your coaching education journey back in Europe. Tell me, what was your beginning? What were your beginnings like in this soccer sport, football?
From the playing aspects?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I started like most people do when I was a young boy with a big dream, mostly just in the back garden with my elder brother, my father, just kicking a ball around. Didn't join a structured team till I was about 11 or 12 years old, and then just played in the local community for a few years. Within that, I had a couple of trials here and there with some teams, but never really advanced into anything, I would say, stable until I was 17 years old. I then decided to move north and go to Morecambe. So I played up there for 2 years. So the objective there was obviously to try and get a professional contract, but at the same time, they understood the importance of education, and that's where I received one of my associates over in the UK as well. It was in Morecambe and Lancaster University. So studied there for 2 years, was able to obviously obtain a degree, but also, like I said, have that dream to try and get a professional contract. So wasn't anything, I would say, notable, but just tried to pursue it. And then 19 years old, came the time, I would say, crunch time to make a decision. I didn't get the contract at Morecambe. I really enjoyed the games, though. I enjoyed playing it. I was still young. I was 19 years old. So I just asked myself the question, what's next for me? And they've done a fantastic job of building relationships with some universities in the United States and helping all the English lads understand that you can continue with your education over in America. You can continue to play. And hopefully, if you do well over there, you know, get yourself into the MLS, get yourself into the USL. So that was me up until 19 years old. I took a scholarship, as you had mentioned before, my resume over at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. So I was a soccer player over there for 4 years. Had a difficult time, the most difficult time on my body. Picked up many injuries throughout my 4 years. Freshman year, I think I'd fractured my big toe. First game of the season, so... or my first game, which was about the third or fourth game in. Fractured my toe, continued to try and push myself through it. Obviously was playing probably around 50%. Was able to get through the season, but was in a lot of pain during that year. Sophomore year turned around, was a little bit better. I was able to have the only year that I was injury-free. Had a decent year. Moved into the junior year pretty quickly and went into my junior year, pretty good shape, really determined, obviously understanding I had 2 years left to try and push myself for a contract somewhere and to get noticed. And then roughly around three quarters of the way through the season, I was playing in a game and just a little bit of a unnatural injury occurred as I was receiving the ball down on my chest and a guy who was pressuring me from behind, I think fell over maybe his own shoes or something and just clapped it into me.
But it's like a movie.
It literally is. It rolled my ankle and it was my left ankle. It put me out for a few weeks right around, you know, when we get into conference playoffs and some of the more important games. So dealt with that as well. And then I was determined that summer to really push myself physically, be in the best shape possible for my senior year and give it one last hurrah, if you would say so, to try and make it. And I think it was three games into my senior year. Yeah, three games in, I ruptured my Achilles. So a grade one rupture. So that was my playing career.
Wow.
In a few minutes for you. So a lot of enjoyment as a kid, a lot of pain and suffering as I got into being a teenager and a young adult. And like I said, I played three games my senior year. Obviously, I had an injury which put me back about 18 months. after that, I had some desire to maybe go in to try and push a USL team. There was a local USL team in Tulsa called Tulsa Roughnecks. I knew the coach there. But I fell in love with coaching. And that was when I started my coaching career. So, yeah, that was a little bit of my playing days for you.
Interesting. Wow. It sounds like a Latino soap opera, dude. I mean, going from one injury to the next and, you know, things that you never expect. I guess moral of the story is for any player, for your players at St. Louis City, they got to take care of themselves because injuries are our worst enemies as players in this sport. I would say, take it as far as say in any sport, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I knew many very talented players back in the UK that were in academies, were getting looked at by academies, and it was always injuries that held many players back. I know from my personal point of view as well, it held me back. Did I ever have the potential to make it at the highest level? I don't think so. I knew the game a lot.
Really?
I was a good player. I wouldn't say great, and that's just me being modest. No, I would say overall, you're spot on. Injuries are a big setback in sports. And yeah, a lot of players, I would say, after 16 years old, still think they're indestructible and they can just play through injuries. And my advice to the lads at City and to all the players out there is when you feel fatigue, when you feel injuries coming on, you know, take importance of that and take care of your bodies.
Absolutely. We are with David Critchley. He is the MLS Next Academy coach for the new St. Louis, Missouri club. That is St. Louis City SC. David, talk to us about your upbringing in England, because I haven't had the blessing of being in your country. I know. I've only been to Central Eastern Europe, to Romania, to Hungary, to Slovakia. I think some sort of small passage through Austria, but I've always been so in love with the idea of going to your home country. I know you're from Liverpool, and it seems like you even had Steven Gerrard as a neighbor. Is that true?
He was, yes. Yeah, just, okay. Yeah, just around the corner his grandparents lived there. He spent a lot of time there as well, and It was fun to see him drive by. Obviously, he was a big inspiration in Liverpool. He was in the academies from a very young age. He went through the academies into the first team, and as a young player, that obviously became a global superstar. And seeing him in his early days, just driving around, obviously was inspirational to me. But Liverpool is a very passionate city. England, a very passionate country when it comes to football, but specifically Liverpool. The fans are fantastic. I think when I was younger, I'd always wanted a season ticket just to go and watch the team week in, week out. And I believe one year I looked into it when I was 14 years old or so, or my parents did for maybe a Christmas present, and there was a 10-year wait list just to get a season ticket. So that would have put me at 24. So as you can see, there's a big following in Liverpool, very passionate fans. A lot of them would say football is the most important thing to them in life. So it's a country that's very passionate about the sport, loves the sport. So it really came into me from an early age of the excitement for football and how much just it meant to me personally and my family and everybody around back home.
How significant of a role did your family play in all of this and in you studying abroad, in you coaching, in you playing?
A huge role. My dad was my a coach when I was younger, when I was, you know, 12, 13 years old. He was a coach on the team that I played for. He played a great role. He was able to be a coach for me and advise me with obviously some soccer development, but also he didn't take that into the personal life, and he was my father away from the field.
Very nice.
My mom was the cheerleader, the supporter, so she just showed up to every game with my grandmother and just cheered me along. Doesn't know too much about the game, but myself, my father, my brother, we live and breathe it. So she had to accept it in a way and just be around it all the time. So
poor thing. She,
yeah. So she was in a position where just constant support all the time. And I think when I moved to America, that was tough for my mum. It was tough for my mum and dad, but more my mum, because I think she always assumed that I was coming over for 4 years to get an education and going back to the UK. So that's 12 years ago now. So every year, I think it was a little bit different for her to understand that, you know, I'm probably going to remain in the United States for quite some time and pursue my pathway here. So just always support, though. You know, it was really difficult for them to, I think, let me go over to the United States as a young mm-hmm. as a young man and be in a country by myself. I didn't know anybody. I speak to them once or twice a week, even to today. They keep me very grounded. They keep me thank very you. Humble as well. So I wouldn't be here today without them too.
If you don't mind, what are the names of you know, your dad, your mother, father, mother, and your brother? Of course, what I've seen in pictures. Who are they?
Yeah. Mother is Gladys, father's Ken, and brother is James.
James. All right, Gladys, Ken, and James. Thank you so much for allowing us to enjoy David and giving us a friend. I have to say to your parents specifically, they've raised an excellent, brilliant man with values. That's really, really important. I just want to say hi from Missouri all the way to England, to Liverpool. Hope they're doing well and they see they watch the episode. All right, that's a little bit, you know, getting to know more about you, David. It's wonderful. Every time we speak, you know, I feel like two friends never really end up knowing everything about one another. And that happens in all sorts of relationships, work relationships, love relationships, friend relationships. And so it's just a blessing for me to learn more about you. I would like to know, what are some of your hobbies, if any, outside of soccer? Do you have any?
I do. I have a few. I recently just picked up a new hobby of golf. So played a few times when I was younger. I mean, probably once every year, once every, you know, 18 months even. But yeah. I would say over the last 4 or 5 months, I probably get there twice a week now. So I would consider it now a hobby. I am not good at all, but I'm trying my best. I know, obviously, it's a sport that requires a lot of patience.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It's tested me in those areas quite often. But no, I'm really enjoying golf. It's fun. It gets me out there. It's a good game to, I would say, just spend time with friends, relaxing. Mm-hmm. I do know this a little bit about you as well. I also play some chess.
we haven't played yet, which is
we haven't sad, played yet.
You have a beautiful chess set, dude. I have to say, the wooden board, it's beautiful. I see your stories. Love it. I would love to play with you. Just have a cup of tea or something. Yeah,
absolutely. We will do. I think I've seen you read a few games on, you know, end game strategy and whatnot. So I'm not there yet. I just play for fun more probably than you, but let's get a game going together soon here. So I also like chess a lot.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Yeah, but both interesting, huh? Both sports that are very popular for teaching patience. Very interesting, needed. David. Wow.
It's needed.
There's something needed about you. Huh? That's right. Awesome. All right. So we're getting to know more about an MLS Next Academy coach. If you're just tuning in, this is David Critchley, a coach, a former player, an England or English national who came to live abroad and study abroad. And now he's here and it's been in the U.S. for over a decade. You know, you've been longer in the U.S. You've lived longer than I have. I've only been here almost 11 years. You've been here, you said, 12 years. What are some of the challenges that you faced as an international in the United States? Have there been any culture shocking moments for you? I mean, you speak the same language, right? I would assume it would be easier, but I don't know. You can speak to that.
Yeah, I've been very lucky for 12 years, living in Oklahoma for 9 of them, St. Louis for 2.5, 3 of them, two and a half years, 3 years. I've been extremely blessed. I haven't come across many difficult challenges in the United States. I've had a great support group around me, a lot of friends, people that I would consider more than friends now, very close people to me. So there's been no, nothing comes up on the top of my head right now that are dramatic challenges. The biggest challenge I deal with on a personal level is just obviously spending time away from family, who is really important to me. So through the, I would say the most difficult period, which for most people was last year, which was COVID. Very challenging period for everybody. I was living alone during that time. So just finding ways to connect with friends still via, you know, Zoom calls and FaceTime, and even jumped on video games every now and then, which I never used to as a kid. So I picked that up pretty late. But, nice. You know, playing some video games with friends as well, and staying mentally healthy, I think was important. Mm-hmm. You know, going out and exercising regularly was also something that I tried to do. But major challenges, not really, not so far. So, I mean, I've been very lucky. I've been very blessed here. So knocking on wood for the rest
of the day. Yeah, for sure. I think it's time for us to explore more of your soccer path. I think that's what we've all been waiting for. And so we're going to dive in. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So I would like to know, we touched base a little bit on that playing career back home as well as here in college. So I think we could say that's out of the checklist. Let's just focus on your coaching journey. How important it is to you to really continue to educate yourself in football, to get coaching licenses, to get into workshops, to get into seminars, to how important and relevant is it today's soccer world in the States, MLS Next Level per se, to be an educated soccer coach?
I would say it's the most important one. You look at many characteristics or many qualities of a coach and many roles they have to fill, and there's a lot of them, but I would still say the most important one to be a successful youth coach, college coach, professional coach is knowledge of the game. And the one thing I can openly and honestly say is that by every year that I gain more experience, by every different license that I get, I know I have so much more to learn. I understand every year more, every license that I get, that there's so many ways to teach the game. There's so many ways the game can be played. So yeah, every year I become, I would say, more humble and understanding that I don't know the answers, and I'm many, many, many years away from knowing all of the answers, if you can ever get to that point. So it's crucial in the development. So for the coaches that are listening in and watching, I think it's important that you get your licenses. But within that as well, that's more formal education. I think one of the most important ones is informal education, and just speaking to colleagues, speaking to other coaches on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. That's where I think I've spent a lot of time in my growth. Is the licenses are fantastic and getting them off the checklist, but the conversations that I have just every day, every week with peers, with friends, with players, I think that's where the growth really happens. So just consistently embed yourself in the game and make sure you have a close circle of friends that encourage you, that obviously challenge you, and you'll continue to learn, you'll continue to grow.
Absolutely. When it comes to coaching education, I mean, coaching in general, informal education, what are some ways in which you are informally educating yourself every day?
The way I'm formally or informally educating myself,
Informally, right?
Yeah.
Besides licenses.
Yeah, I would say a lot of the stuff that I do is actually not even soccer related. I spend a lot of time listening to podcasts and putting on videos on YouTube of just general leadership. You know, you look at some of the most successful CEOs in the world, you have TED Talks, you have all these different unique ways of learning. So I would say I spend quite a bit of time just reading books, listening to different things online. Obviously, it's a wonderful place to go now for information. So just consistently putting myself in positions where I spend 20, 30 minutes, you know, a day at least, listening to someone speak about leadership, character, not even involved in coaching, really. So that's important to me. And then, like you said, just informally, you know, I have the luxury here. We meet almost every day as a staff, and we get to just speak about the game and speak about, you know, either reflecting on a training session, reflecting on a game, and just being in the conversation every single day has helped me learn something new about some of the colleagues that I work with here, or something about the players that I don't see at first. So just getting some insight from everybody is also important.
Beautiful. I agree with you. I think it's the podcasts you listen to, the videos you watch in terms of interviews, in terms of snippets of coaching education. And not only something really, really interesting you said is not only soccer related, but out of the soccer realm, leadership, people management skills, interpersonal skills, communications, so important. I mean, the role of a coach goes way beyond being on the pitch and knowing the session you're planning to train, correct? What are some relevant skills you think that the modern coach should definitely look forward to developing and instilling in their lifestyle or coaching style?
I think one of them is you have to be inspirational. You have to inspire players. You can have all the information in the world. It can be the correct information. But if you can't inspire players, I don't see that being a winning model or a successful model. So that would, for me, is very important. And another one is just is people skills. It comes in kind of similar to being inspiring, but people skills, you know, social interaction, emotional intelligence, I think are critical. So you have to be, you know, you have to be emotionally intelligent. You have to be socially intelligent. You have to be able to pick up on specific cues from players, body language. You know, many times I would say it's my social intelligence that allows me to understand when I'm talking to the players, do I need to give them more information or do I need to just be quiet and understand based off their body language and where they're at? Is do I need to step back and just let the game teach itself at that moment? So just picking up some of these skills, I think, are very important for all the coaches out there.
This is great. We are with David Critchley again, St. Louis City SC, Academy Coach for MLS Next. And what a blessing it's been, man, just to learn more about your background and also what you do personally to be the best professional and coach for your players and for your organization. Now, what do you think of, let me see. You not just got into coaching, you're just in the St. Louis City SC platform. You've been here for almost 3 months. But let's talk about what led you to St. Louis City SC, meaning the prior experience. You were at Oklahoma with a club. You were there with a USL team, if I'm not mistaken, in Tulsa. But also you were a part of the Fuse Athletic. So it seems to me you've been not only a coach, but you've also been involved in the admin and soccer operations side of things. Do you miss that at all? Do you miss the technical director role? Do you miss the director of coaching role? Do you miss the leading coaching education for other coaches and trying to be a part of that player development plan?
I do. I miss parts of it. Some parts I don't miss. But no, I think overall, it's something that's needed. I think for a lot of coaches that continue to aspire to get to the top, you can't just be on the field and be a coach. You have to wear many different hats in your early career and your growth. So a big part of my role at Louis Hughes Athletic was as a technical director, was doing some parent education and understanding the US parents in how important it is for them that their son or their daughter's in a safe environment, that they're continuing to grow. And being able to have moments in my career where I've led parent meetings and I've understood the role of a parent more. Obviously, a big part of my role was coaching development. So speaking to coaches that have more experience than me, less experience than me, and just figuring out their journey and how I can help them and how I can be of assistance to those guys as well, without knowing maybe so much about the system of play that they play or the style or even any of the players, just getting a more viewpoint from a bigger perspective was really important as well. And then dealing in the administrative side of the game wasn't my cup of tea, is what we say.
I think it's important.
I think it's important that we know the role of the people that keep these clubs running. It is a lot of the admin staff, and being in their shoes for a few weeks, a few months, a few years, and understanding the workload that they have and the amount of responsibility that they have to keep a club successfully running helped me understand their role more and helped me appreciate their role more. So I've ticked a lot of boxes over the last few years of in the youth game. And it was because of those prior experiences and past positions of mine that helped me be a better coach collectively.
Of course. Interesting, huh? So it really does play a part in your professional journey here to have experienced those different roles in this fun, exciting world. There's so much more than just being a fan, isn't it, David? I mean, soccer is just, I mean, football is just full of so many different things, especially nowadays that it has been now more professionalized. You know, and now you look at someone like you being a student of the game and professionalizing yourself even more. But it's so important to be humble. I keep hearing the same theme as you're speaking, starting from your families, keeping you grounded, to even though you're now where a lot of coaches, obviously, we're not going to ignore that, would like to be in your shoes at this point, but still being humble and knowing that we don't know it all. And that's just such an important piece of our personal growth. What do you think makes, this is a different question because I'm not sure if you've coached in Europe just yet. I think you have because of your UEFA B and now you're waiting for the A, but how much different is it to coach European players from American players? You think you could speak to that?
Yeah. I haven't had a ton of experience coaching over there. And when I did coach over there, it was when I was younger, so at 19. So a lot of the players were younger, starting off in their soccer, you know, career, if you would say so. But one thing I consistently learn over here is the players are very, extremely gifted. Technically, they're extremely gifted physically. They have a wonderful, I would say, collective as in US soccer educational setup here. So we're starting to develop very intelligent players as well. And there's a lot of resources and money being poured into US soccer, which is fantastic. Missing piece that I've seen just in my personal experience is the players in Europe are very, very driven, very passionate. And that just comes because it is the major sport in the UK.
Sure.
It is more, people play soccer in England to give their family so forth a better life, to kind of get them away from, if they're in poverty or they're in difficult situations, they play soccer with that big dream of making a professional and giving their family an opportunity they never had. Whereas here it's still a sport. And we find them individuals here and there, but then individuals in Europe are more common, if we would say so. So one thing I try to do here, at St. Louis City, inspire the players like we talked about and try to let them understand the unique opportunity that they have here. So that would be the one missing piece right now.
You know, it's so fascinating to me because that speaks to the truth of the sport back in my home country of Honduras. People play the game because it's not only the main game but or sport, but also because of that hope for a better tomorrow. And so to me, it's fascinating because I would think, well, when I compare apples to apples, the economic landscape of England when compared to Honduras, wow, what a difference. And yet you're saying to me that they play in there for the most part to achieve a better tomorrow. So interesting. So are things really hard in England?
They are. Liverpool, obviously, you know, is where I was born and raised, so I can speak more specifically about the city.
Sure. Yeah.
It's a blue collar city. A lot of obviously your parents and your grandparents and your friends' parents, they have, I would say, jobs that are the word is not coming to mind right now, but. You know, electrician, you know, a cook, all these jobs, which is fantastic. Everyone has their own profession. And I've always believed in, everyone's called for different reasons, but everybody still back home plays the sport for that opportunity to play at Anfield one day and to play in front of 80,000 people and to play on television against the best players in the world. So, there's no disrespect towards any other profession in the world. It's just in Europe and in Liverpool, the profession that everybody wants to be is a professional soccer player.
Wow. Can you imagine? I mean, obviously you can because you've been there, but I cannot imagine the level of competition. Is it better then for you as an English national to come to the States instead of staying in there from a competition or competitive landscape or you know, scenario, do you think?
Yeah, only 1-2% of youth players actually make it into the senior game and the professional game. In a city like Liverpool, there's tens of thousands of players that are trying to be that 1% and 2%. So it's really difficult. It's difficult in the major cities. Obviously, there's a balance. We have around 90 professional teams in the UK, and it's a small country, as you know, whereas over in the US, it's a third of that number. So, but it's a bigger country as well at the same time. So there's a great opportunity for young players to come out to the United States and pursue a career over here.
That's great. So we're surpassed a little bit of half of the interview, which is great. We're about to jump into a different section that I just kind of started with a little board here. But before doing so, we have David Critchley here, a coach, professional in the soccer industry, former player, also international student now, who has lived for over 10 years in the States. He's at St. Louis City SC. I couldn't be prouder of him. This is the club representing our city, our community. And I can't wait to see them on the pitch 2023. Right now, we have the academy up and running. Your players are so far crushing it. And hopefully, they continue to do so. Just wanted to remind everybody, you can watch the show on YouTube, or you can look us up in the most popular platform, podcasting platforms, such as Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just go for anchor.fm/MoraesMilara or hashtag the Alex Way. Everything is in the description, including David's link. So hopefully David won't kill me for sharing his info with you. let's talk about David. I have a board in here. We're not going to get into rocket science, but I would like to know, David, what are your preferred systems of play? And I just want to make a disclosure here. I'm not asking for St. Louis City SC. I'm asking for David Critchley in particular. What do you personally like to see the initial disposition of your team if you were to have your ideal players?
Yeah, I love the 4-3-3. It looks like that's a system that you've almost got set up on the board there.
Yep. All right. When it comes to a 4-3-3, David, what are you looking for to implement such system? What do you think a coach as yourself has to see in their players, some key qualities for you to implement this system?
Game understanding is the most important one. So we need players that are intelligent. I am often preaching over here that the brain is the first muscle that works. So when we speak about, you know, speed of play and all these different components, it's the mind. So intelligent players, just collectively with all 11 of those, are very important. Some key qualities in the individuals. I love outside backs. So we look at our left back and right back. I love those players are very aggressive in the attack. They're technical, and they can provide excellent service into the box. They can receive the ball under pressure and play out of tight areas. So for the outside backs, you look at the Trent Arnolds of the world, you look at the Robertsons of the world, the Luke Shaws from Manchester United, played out there for everybody listening. You look at these types of players, and they're fulfilling their roles really well.
All right.
Exactly like that.
Yeah, and obviously coming down to, you got to have a great stamina, I would say, from a physical standpoint, correct?
Correct.
To make sure you run back and forth. All right. So now we know a little bit about the initial disposition. And of course, this is a utopia. We're not in a utopia, obviously. You have players with different dynamics. But what do you like to see out of this team, you know, with your ideal players, in attack? What's the system of play in attack for your 4-3-3 coach?
More like a 2-5-3, so exactly where you've got the magnets almost there in a position.
All right. 2-5-3. All right. And so the six, we have the six, or in Central and South America, we say this is the 5-5. So we talk it in here. Do you want this three to be stretched, or still to give you that sort of triangle and diamond shape here?
Triangles and diamonds. No, that's
all right.
The universal shape that we always want our teams to be in. You know, consistently gives you passing options to the left. It gives you passing options to the right. It gives you a pass to break a line. So if we can put them in different lines on the field and have them what we call here in the, you know, from a, I would say a tactical point of view, is playing between the lines, very important. So that six needs to be in the exact position you've got them in there, which is fantastic. The team for me, I enjoy possession. I think it's fantastic to watch a team that keeps hold of the ball. But one area that I really enjoy watching the game is the transition to attack. So getting to goal fast, you know, being very lively in the attack. I want to say Italy in the Euros scored 11 of the 13 goals, somewhere around that number, in six passes or less. So very dangerous on the counter-attack going forward. Obviously, Liverpool, again, the team that I'm a fan of, I love watching their counter-attacks. They're most dangerous at times from defending corner kicks and then going up the field quickly. So in the attack, I would say you need players that are very brave, which are these all now are mental components in expressing themselves. You mentioned it before, you need the physicality of players with a lot of endurance, so they can cover a lot of space and a lot of demand that we put on the body. And then ideally, those outside left midfielder and outside right midfielder, you know, fantastic 1v1 dribblers, can definitely receive the ball, isolate outside backs, get at them 1v1, and consistently put service into the box.
All right. So you like to see this display and attack as, let's finish the game in the least amount of touches possible.
Yes.
All right. And also by exploiting the space we have wide open, playing in between the lines. And for this to happen, you need intelligence, bravery, technical dribblers. That makes sense. Now, how about defending? We can talk so much about defending sort of system of play, but for your 4-3-3 and that ideal team with those ideal players, what do you want them? Do you want them to situate them in a low block, mid block, high block? What does David Critchley prefers the most?
The highest block you can possibly have.
All right. So, the same shape, or would you change anything at all?
No, the same shape. You know, one common tendency we have with our, so I'll use the example here of the outside backs, is we encourage them to get involved in the attack. We encourage them to get high up the field. And then the other team has big possession of the ball. And the first thought of mine from them players is to run back towards my center backs. And okay. I now encourage them to stay high, to put pressure on the opponents. So consistently pressing the ball is very important to me. I know back in, you know, the early 2000s, there was this Barcelona 6-second rule that was involved from, I think, Pep Guardiola. Yeah. Just getting the ball back very quickly. And I just started to understand the reason why is, if you're attacking an opponent and they're in their defensive shape, and they win the ball, that's the most crucial moment of the game, is before they get organized, before they get into positions where they're comfortable in the attack, before they get into their attack in shape, which roughly takes 6 seconds, let's just say around that time period, pressing the ball back and getting it very quickly is the most important thing. So you look at that from a tactical board, you look at that from a coaching perspective, is recovering the ball before the opponent gets organized offensively. Yes. Is very, very important. Then you'd even draw it back and be, you know, you put yourself into a position of being a spectator or being a fan. You want your team to have the ball. You want your team to be consistently on the attack and score goals. So getting the ball quickly, higher up the field, is proven that if you recover the ball the furthest distance from your goal, the less likely you'll concede and the more likely you'll score. So
exactly. That's interesting. And okay, so there seems to be a little bit of a Johan Cruyff, Barca Messia, a bit of Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, Liverpool, Man City kind of school of thoughts in you. And by the way, when it comes to this system of play, in ever since I started the second season, really, you're the first coach, really, that I interview and that tells me to... that you prefer to keep your team up in there. Because I was with a Spanish, and again, everybody has a different school of thought. Ricardo La Volpe, a famous coach that Pep Guardiola thought it was phenomenal. He's from Argentina, coach in Mexico. He says that every coach has their own recipe book. So it seems like you like to leave numbers up, press high, and try to get the ball as quickly as possible. And it seems to me, David, if I'm not mistaken, you like to exploit the transition moments. So you don't even like the organization of the opponent. You just let's go now, because they're completely unorganized. So let's just go in there, intercede, disrupt that buildup, and get the ball back. Is that correct? You exploit those transitions, or you like to?
I do. I think, obviously, when we look at the game, anywhere in the world from you 16 and down, it's consistently played in transition. You know, many teams will struggle to get to the organized possession, will struggle to get to the organized defense, and there's consistently transition. And as a coach, that's something that we need to understand. We need to teach how to be better than two moments in the game, because we go to the training ground, we coach, you know, a rondo box or a 6v3+3, and it's always connect 15 passes, connect 20 passes. And I'm like, that very rarely happens in the game. So we need to teach on the training field what happens in the game. And a lot of my exercises are transitionally based. So we start the repetition with a player unorganized, maybe on the defensive side, or unorganized on the offensive side. And that's where the repetition might start. But yeah, for the game, when we're playing on the weekends, I really enjoy the transitional moments of the game. The most difficult one I see with teams around the country is recognizing the moment to attack and recognizing the moment to get yourself into possession.
Yeah.
So many times we win the ball, the players, their first thought of mind is, can I get to the opponent's goal? Is there a pass that can break a line? Is there movement in behind the lines?
Absolutely.
And for some reason, if that's not there, because the defense is organized, because they're compact, then we need to immediately exit that position where we won the ball. We can get ourselves into a wave of attack. We can keep the ball. We can possess. But there's always a purpose to break them down.
Absolutely. No, this is great. Learning more and more as we go. And we're getting close to the end of the interview. We started a little bit later than planned. But yeah, we're getting there and keeping track of time just so that everybody's aware. Let me see here. We talked about your preferred, you know, systems of play, your preferred initial disposition. We've talked about what you'd like to see in that ideal team. And this is, again, outside of any club who were to hire you, because we understand that, or I'd like to have the audience understand that there's a club philosophy that needs to be respected, because we are employees, obviously, even if we're coaches. But how much freedom do you have, David, or have you had in your career to put on your own spice into things?
I would say quite a lot. Obviously, it's like you just mentioned, which is critical, and people need to understand is you need to have a curriculum. You need to have an understanding, just like the school system, of what you're going to learn, when you're going to learn, at specific ages, at the specific developmental stages of a player. But within that, you know, I was a technical director of a large club, and even at St. Louis City over here, we understand the importance of you know, Jurgen Klopp once said, this is the character of the team is mostly based around the character of the coach.
So pretty much, yeah.
We don't get told to be robots. We don't get told you have to run this exact session. It has to be every exercise has to be this amount of time. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's important that there is a curriculum, and yes, there is importance of understanding at what ages and what development cycles you should be teaching players is important. But within that, every coach should be able to express themselves in their unique personality. So, and our staff here, Lutz Fallensteel is fantastic at that. Andreas, who is over in Germany still, but will be joining us here pretty soon, is fantastic at that. We have the freedom to develop our own training sessions. And I think the most important one is, and this is what I've picked up in my life just recently, as long as you can explain why you do what you do, you're okay. So if there's an intelligent, educated answer behind a specific exercise or a specific coaching point, then that's good.
Wow. I mean, this is just great. Exciting to see you now in a different atmosphere with, you know, former professional soccer player himself. Well, former professional soccer players, because not only Lutz played in all the continents, the FIFA, under all the FIFA continents and organizations, but also you have Luis Swisher, who is also a former Guatemala national player and player of that league. So tell me about working in a multicultural environment under a German, perhaps, philosophy. There seems to be autonomy. There seems to be the freedom that you're speaking about. But how, in what ways are you enriching your or making your own coaching booklet or recipe book richer with having Lutz and Swisher and Andreas and TK and all of this folks? What ways are they adding to your life, David?
In major ways, obviously from a coaching point of view, we meet daily and we consistently challenge each other. We consistently have different ideas. Some of our meetings will go on for multiple hours around just very very small topics, you would say so. So maybe this is what we want from our number nine during offensive or organized attack. And that conversation can last an hour. So the one thing that I can speak about with the team here is some of those characteristics that I explained that I felt like I perform in. They also perform in, as well as everybody is here to learn. Everybody has a growth mindset. There's no one here that's it's my way or the highway. It's consistent collaboration. And that's one thing that as we continue to develop and as you continue to step up in the coaching platform, it becomes more collaboration. You now see it in the professional game. You know, there's 20 staff coaches on a first team. They all are very educated in their unique position. So for someone in a first team setting, whether it's the St. Louis City first team coach, whether it's Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, he has a staff there that he respects, that he listens mm-hmm. to. And they're just some qualities that a good organization and a good soccer club needs. So yeah, we fully respect each other here. We have different ideas, which is good. That's not a bad thing.
It's great. Yeah, absolutely.
And we come together.
What is one? I have this question. I tend to ask this question a lot lately, perhaps in not many episodes, but lately, as in with my network of coaches, and it's just so important as a coach to understand the role of an assistant coach, and to make sure you delegate to your assistant coach and make sure that you have the experience to be an assistant coach. I mean, it's so important. And so obviously you're leading the under 16 team for St. Louis City. Swisher is doing so with the under 17s, but I know you have in certain capacities, assistant coaches. How do you utilize an assistant coach? Because most coaches, at least in the U.S., I know around the world, but because we're in the U.S. landscape, no, it's all me, it's all my way or the highway. I brought the session, I got it, or just warmed them up, or micromanagement, even seeing what the heck is happening with the warm up. How important is the assistant coach figure, and how do you personally are using that assistant coach figure? What do you do to work together with an assistant coach?
Yeah, great question. We have Elvira Kafedic and Charles Rankin over at City as well. And Charles, with myself, is working with the U16s. So we consistently meet on a regular basis. But some of the responsibilities of Charles is any training session that we have and any setup that we have is always important that one of us is looking on the offensive side of the ball and one of us is looking on the defensive side. So if I'm going to work on the attacking principles for the day and building a session to go forward and attack an opponent, Charles is making it the most difficult for me on the defensive side and working with the players off the ball and vice versa. And he'll then have an attacking topic, and a few days later, I'll take a defensive topic and we'll build the session. We'll talk about the coaching points, how I can give him resistance, he can give me resistance. So to the capacity of a training environment, and that's how myself and Charles have been working together, very similar with Luis and Elvia over with the U17s as well. Then some of the other responsibilities, Charles does a wonderful job in the individual development players, so now more specific one-on-one actions. So whether that's taking some of our players right now and doing some shooting exercises just prior to the training session or after the game, you know, talking to one of the players about their individual performance within the game, because I'm usually addressing the team. So Charles's responsibility with the individuals is very important as well. And I know Elvia does a wonderful job with the 17s. So yeah, to answer your question, we always have a plan.
Of course.
The role of the assistant coach for everybody out there is to not pick up cones. And I would say another role of the assistant coach, which they do a wonderful job here, is challenge the head coach and challenge their ideas and ask questions. Why are we doing this? How can we be more efficient? Because that's just needed. That's consistently needed, is you need people around you that are going to ask the question, why are we doing what we're doing? And if we can find ways for it to be better.
That's phenomenal. Okay, so I think we have reached probably the end of the interview. We're approaching. I think before starting with my Critchley lightning round questions, I think it's important for us to receive some more wisdom. And so before wrapping things up, David, it's been a wonderful time. I've enjoyed talking to you and getting to know more of you through this interview. What would your piece of advice be? And these are different questions kind of in the same context. The first question, what would your advice be for those young folks, especially, you know, Europeans, folks in England, or just youth in general, to play, to have the opportunity to play to in the highest levels? Well, what is something based on your experience that is very, very significant in the journey?
Yeah, for the player's point of view, I would say is hardworking. And I know it's very general. I know it's a generic word that we use all the time, but being hardworking, you know, I tell the players here, be a professional every day. So even on a day off, what does being a professional youth player looks like, whether that's going on YouTube and watching your favorite clip of your favorite player. So I know it sounds very simple, but just hard work. There is no secret ingredients. Hard work will get you where you need to be.
Excellent. It's what you do on and off the pitch, huh? Taking care of yourself, not going to play indoor soccer and exposing yourself to injuries. That's a good one. All right. So how about for coaches? Coaches who, obviously, you're now in the center of it all, at least in the St. Louis, great St. Louis metro area in the state of Missouri. And we can see this because now, David, you know, you and the staff are with being interviewed and in some sort of TV show segments and YouTube videos and Facebook videos, Instagram videos. You're in the center of it all. So what if someone here is watching who would like to be where you are today? What really helped you reach that platform today?
We talked about a little bit of it before, but it has been important to me in my life and in my journey and my growth. So I'll mention it again. And there's two, and the first one is humility. You need humility. You need to be humble in everything that you do. And the second one is to have a growth mindset, and they kind of come in hand in hand. And like I'd mentioned before, but I'll say it again real quick, is every year that I'm gain more experience, every additional license that I pick up, every additional high-level coach that I meet and have a conversation with, I realize that I need to learn more, grow more, and I don't know as much about the game as what I did the year before. So that growth mindset and
I think you were saying about that growing mindset. I'm sorry. I think we lost it a little bit, but it's okay. This is not the first time. You got it now?
It happens.
Yeah. You were talking about that growing mindset piece for a coach who would like to reach that level one day, MLS next or professional work environment. You're saying the humility and growing mindset goes hand in hand. And I don't know what else you were expanding on in terms of both of those.
Yeah, I was just, I know they go hand in hand, and I was just saying, I'm not sure what I got cut off there, so I apologize, but
no problem.
Just if every year I gain more experience, every additional license that I get, every different coach I meet, high level coach, a lot of insight, a lot of wisdom. It's just the more I personally understand that I need to learn more about the game, So that growth mindset is important, and humility. But when I talk about growth mindset, I don't just mean as a coach and understanding the X's and O's more. I mean a growth mindset in how to manage players, how to have, you know, social intelligence, emotional intelligence. We spoke a little bit about those before as well. So those two are the most important ones, though. Having a growth mindset and having humility within that.
Beautiful. Okay, so we're going to get started with the last part. We're going to go through some lightning round questions or words. What this is, David, is I'm just going to randomly pop some words that I've thought about and that you've helped me thought about throughout our conversation to you. And obviously, the point would be, as soon as I throw a word at you, hopefully you can think of something, of a meaning in a word. But it doesn't have to be a word. It can be it can be a phrase or whatever you wanna say.
I'm not good at these, but go ahead. We're gonna go.
No problem. That's awesome. Okay, so we'll go through this round of words or whatever you want to call it, and then the final question before we finish with our episode. All right, so this is the lightning round with Coach David Critchley from St. Louis City SC. Let's go for it. Okay. England.
Fish and chips.
Europe.
Soccer. Football.
Family.
Love.
Liverpool.
Passion.
The US. America.
Opportunity.
Oklahoma.
College.
Yeah. That's awesome. About St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis City Soccer Club.
The football, the soccer ball.
Freedom.
Freedom. MLS next.
Talent. Lots.
Player. Soccer player.
Opportunity to grow.
Coaching.
Life.
All right, so we're done with that. And that was great, great answers. I think you're super ready for that. And the last piece of the puzzle, David, before I say farewell to you, is, let me see here. Yeah. What's next for Coach David Critchley? What do you think is next for you? What's your vision? Are we going to see you coaching in Europe back home? Or like you said, you'll stay in the U.S. for years to come. Where do you see yourself, David?
The U.S. I would see myself here for the next 10 years. I'm fully committed to this job right now. I think in this these types of jobs, you need to be fully committed from where you're at and giving your best. But within that, I do have goals. I do have ambitions. And that would be to coach first team football one day. So my mindset right now is to work as hard as I can every single day here. You know, be humble, have that growth mindset that we spoke about, but to get into first team football. So I'm excited for that. I'm really happy where I'm at right now currently. Thrilled in my current position. But yeah, I would love one day, the ambition is to coach first team football.
That's great. David, I'm going to tell you this as a friend, someone who has known you for quite some time. I'm telling you, I was raised to just see the positives in people. So easily in this world, we're caught up with seeing someone and pointing out a flaw or something negative. I want to be like I've always been with you, sincere to you, and say I'm proud of you. I'm proud of your achievements. I'm proud of your work. I can see it out there. I've seen you coach your under 16 team. Your players seem to enjoy you, the staff, and you seem to click. I'm really, really honestly pray that you have the opportunities to coach first division football, soccer, and that you continue to soar high, man, because there's so much of you, you know, that I know we're going to continue to see in the soccer landscape. So very proud of you. Thank you for your time. I want to say thank you for St. Louis, to St. Louis City SC also for allowing me to speak with you. And let's not forget about our friend Kashawn Smith. We're official in LinkedIn. He's the man who made it happen in PR. So thank you all really for the time and the conversation, David. I appreciate it.
Cheers, Alex. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, you have a good one, guys. This was David Critchley, MLS Next Coach with St. Louis City SC. Links in the description. Check out his Instagram. Check out, probably he wouldn't mind if you direct message him, or you can also contact the club if you have any questions on how to follow them, their trips, obviously tickets, because this is happening in St. Louis in 2023. So stay tuned, go to our website, check out the description, check out more of David Critchley, and I'll see you all in the next episode of The Alex Way. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Alex Way. We're all over the internet. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn.